Session number 16741, Lieutenant Commander Brian Scott Garrett, Part 1.
Where were you born, please?
I was born in Biddeford, Devon.
Which year was this?
It was in 1918, 1st of June.
What did your father do for a living?
I'm sorry.
What did your father do for a living?
He was actually a scientist, and during the First War, he was employed by the Ministry of Munitions in running a wood distillation plant outside Biddeford.
Did you go to school in Biddeford?
No, we left when I was about a year old and moved to Chichester, where my father took over another factory.
And you went to which school?
We left again Chichester and moved to Lydney in Gloucestershire when I was about 5 years old, so I hadn't started school then.
How did you come to be in the Navy?
It had always been my ambition, and it was fostered by my mother, who was very enamoured of the Navy, and it had always been my ambition to enter the Navy, even though my school wasn't very enthusiastic. Suffice to say, I took the examination and I entered the Navy actually in 1935 as an engineer cadet.
Where were you trained?
The first year of training was on the training ship Frobisher, which sailed from Chatham. We had three cruises we were really part of the crew of the ship. We crewed the ship, and we, of course, had instruction classes and covered the whole range of subjects, seamanship, navigation, engineering, etc.
What were you doing when war broke out?
After that, I left the training ship in 36. I joined the engineering college at Keyham, Devonport, as a midshipman, and then promoted to sub-lieutenant towards the end of my time, which was a four-year course. And I was there when war broke out in 1939.
When did you first go to sea in a warship in the Second World War?
Well, I finished my college, my course, and passed out, and I went to sea. We all went to sea, I hold my term, in April 1940. Most of my fellow officers were dispersed around the world, joining their ships. I was the one who had the good fortune to walk out of the college through the dockyard and join my ship, which was actually refitting in the dockyard, HMS Hood.
What impression did the ship make on you when you joined it?
Well, it was an extraordinary experience because the Hood had an immense reputation. She'd been a sort of very famous ship. She'd been around the world with the Prince of Wales and all sorts of things. She had an enormous reputation. She was one of the largest warships in the world. And it was, in fact, quite a privilege, in a way, to join such a magnificent ship, even though she was very old and not really up to modern standards of the day.
What was life like in the wardroom of that ship?
I started in the gunroom because I was only a sub-lieutenant. And the gunroom routine was very much sort of pre-war, with a senior sub-lieutenant, sort of boss of the whole show. It was rather like a public school, I suppose. And we had a civilian messman, actually, who looked after the messing arrangements. So that in that respect, it was very much like a pre-war setup, which changed later in the war, of course. My time there, of course, I was busy learning my trade in a seagoing ship, although we actually had about at least 4 weeks in harbour completing a refit. In fact, I found myself spending most of my time inside a condenser testing the tubes, which which were being pressured by the water pressure, and the tubes leaked. We had a taper, and the spluttering of water, we knew the tube was leaking and it had to be made good. So that was a task which lasted quite a long time, and I got really fed up with the inside of a condenser. And finally we pulled out of Devonport, and we went up to a dock up on the at Liverpool. We went into the dock at Bootle, Bry Dock, for having to have our bottom scraped and repainted and all the various underwater fittings looked at, etc. And it was that during that time that the actual fall of Dunkirk took place. And it was, of course, a very emotional time. I well remember the terrible distress of people listening to the radio and hearing about the evacuation from Dunkirk. And I, in fact, found myself in charge of a boarding party of armed sailors. We had to take over an Italian ship in the harbour, which was quite interesting, especially as the Italians were actually scared stiff. And we had no difficulty with them. And Jolly Jack found the liquor store and refreshed himself. So we weren't a particularly effective fighting unit by the end of it all. But there was a lot of anti-Italian feeling, of course, because she'd just come into the war. And I think a certain number of shops and things were beaten up in Liverpool.
Did you have anything to do with controlling the people concerned?
Oh, no. We merely supplied, the Navy had to supply these boarding parties to take over the merchant ships that were in the harbour.
Was it a happy ship to be in at that time?
Oh, yes, it had an enormous spirit. As I say, it was still had its pre-war peacetime complement, and the spirit was enormous. And the captain was an extremely popular and energetic man. And there was a feeling of superiority about the Hood, that she was, you know, such a magnificent great ship, that nothing could ever go wrong with her. But she was unfortunately not as well protected as she should have been. And of course that led to her downfall later on.
Were you aware of that at the time?
Oh yes, I think we knew that she was really a bit out of date. We knew that her deck armour wasn't very good. And I think we all were aware that various sort of flash tight arrangements on the magazines and were not of the highest order. It was a vulnerability. We were very worried about air attack, actually, especially as our decks weren't fully armoured. But there it was. I mean, she was a magnificent ship. There's no doubt about it. We sailed from Liverpool and went out and met the first Anzac convoy of all the Australians and New Zealanders. We brought them into the Clyde. It was quite a magnificent sight, really, all these great liners, the Berengarias and Mauritanias, I think. I can't remember all their names, but they all steamed into the Clyde with this enormous great force from the other side of the world. And we escorted them into the Clyde, along with various other ships, of course.
How did you come to leave the ship? Obviously, you weren't in it in May 1941, when it was lost.
Oh no! After the Clyde, we went out to the Mediterranean and became the flagship of Force H, operating from Gibraltar, and we had one or two convoys, and we had the famous Battle of Oran, where we lay off Oran, which was the French Mediterranean base in Algeria, and we spent a ghastly day lying off Oran at action stations. I well remember the long, long day, closed up at action station all day long. while we parleyed with the French, we sent a Captain Holland went in and tried to get the French fleet to either join us or to scuttle themselves or go to some neutral port or something like that. Anyway, what we wanted to do was to neutralize the fleet and stop it getting into German hands. Anyway, they did nothing at all. And finally, around about 5 o'clock, we opened fire. And we caused an enormous destruction. Battleships blew up in Oran and everything. And I think the Dunkirk, one of the French battleships, managed to get out and ran up the coast and then beached itself somewhere. But it was a very tragic affair. And
what are your own memories of the bombardment?
Of actual the firing? Well, of course, I was at action stations. It meant, as an engineer, I was below decks. Actually, I was on one of the lower decks with a sort of damage control party, just in case anything happened. But all one heard was, you know, the enormous explosions of the guns firing and so on. It was nothing really very unusual about it. The worst thing of all was that being at action station so long and so hot and you know, below decks, and the feeling that it was a terrible thing. We were firing up our erstwhile allies, and they never fired back. It was a sort of turkey shoot, really. A couple of years later, actually, I went into Oran in a ship I was sailing back to the UK, and there was a great big plaque on the wall there saying the I think it was the Britannia. This is where it had sunk with the loss of 600 men or something like that. You know, terrible, really, right in the harbour. But so be it.
And after that?
After that, well, we escorted a famous convoy towards Malta, and then I think we went down the coast of Dakar, where there was again trouble with the French, to try and minimise the damage. Because the fall of France and the fact that all these French forces might fall into the hands of the enemy and the Vichy France, you see, meant that we had to take care of all these outposts of the French Empire, where there were ships and forces. Anyway, that all disappeared, and then we went back to the UK and went into Scarpa Flow. We spent the whole of that winter in Scarpa Flow, which was a pretty miserable place to spend a winter. In fact, it was the longest period I ever spent without setting foot on land, about 2 months, I think, without ever actually going ashore.
Do you have any memories of the Dakar raid?
It wasn't a raid at Dakar, no. We went down and sort of threatened them on the I think there was one a French warship in Dakar which we wanted to eliminate, but
so you said you were at Scapa?
Yes, nothing very much happened. We went out occasionally on exercises and things, but we were just sort of sitting up there waiting for, well, ready to intercept the German fleet if it ever came out, of course. That was the main object of it. And it was not an unpleasant period. It was very cold, of course, in the winter up there. But, I can't really remember anything terribly exciting happening there. The most exciting thing was to get ashore on Flotta, which was an island, one of those islands in the Sound where they had a golf course, actually, I think, and chaps would have a bit of recreation. I think I went there once, and the rest of the time one felt spent visiting other ships and meeting colleagues in other ships. There was the whole fleet was there, of course.
So how did you come to leave it?
We came back into Rosyth in January 41, I think it was, and she came back to have a certain amount of work done. I think they changed the anti-aircraft guns on board, various things like that. Anyway, round about January, I left her and was appointed to HMS Euryalus, which was a light fleet cruiser, which was being built in Chatham Dockyard. And I joined Euryalus. By then, of course, I'd got my watchkeeping ticket and been promoted to lieutenant, and I was a fully qualified engineer officer. And I joined Euryalus as I was actually the senior watchkeeping engineer officer, and I also had a department, a damage control department, which was really in charge of all the hull and all the hull spaces and the pumping and flooding and the fire main and all that sort of part of the ship. And the ship was, of course, being built. It was still in dockyard hands. And I was part of the advance complement. We were busy taking over the various systems in the ship from the contractors. And we had various activities, I suppose. One of them was when the ship was commissioned, we had a party from the Lancashire Fusiliers, which was quite interesting. Subsequently, because I eventually met the Lancashire Fusiliers up here in Bury, the Euryalus had always had a great association with the name Euryalus, because the famous landing of the Lancashire Fusiliers when they had five VCs before breakfast at the Dardanelles in the First War. They'd been landed from the Euryalus, the previous Euryalus, the fourth Euryalus. And our captain, incidentally, was Captain Bush, who had been a midshipman in charge of one of the boats landing the Fusiliers. So it was quite a ceremony when we were commissioned and in Chatham Dockyard, because we had a party from the Fusiliers who actually had presented the ship's bell to the ship. So then we sailed and went up and did our working up and speed trials and things like that, and we ended up in Scarpa again. And then finally we sailed for the Mediterranean. But this time we went all the way around via the Cape of Good Hope. And we had a little period in Cape Town, which was great fun, because there wasn't much war going on there. We thoroughly enjoyed ourselves, and there was no blackout and things like that. And then we went up the east coast of Africa and through the Suez Canal and arrived in Alexandria and joined what was called the 15th Cruiser Squadron, based in Alexandria. And one of its primary tasks was running convoys to Malta, which were not very exciting, because we nearly always lost one of the crews. Usually have three cruisers on these convoys, and we nearly always lost one cruiser per convoy, so it was a very expensive operation. We also we did a certain amount of coastal bombardment up the coast.
On the Malta convoys, was the Euryalus hit?
No. We were actually charmed. We were never hit at all. We had ships either side of us hit, submarines, you know. We did actually. I can't remember the exact date, but we actually participated in what was called the Battle of Sirte, and we actually did meet, which was a very rare occasion, units of the Italian fleet. And we were straddled by a salvo from an Italian battleship, and a chunk of metal did actually go through our bridge, caused a very, very small amount of damage. Nobody was hurt at all. Otherwise, the Euryalus had a completely charmed life. In fact, she'd ended the war and was finally broken up after the war, so she was never in any trouble at all. Yes, well, life went on in Alexandria, which was a very pleasant place to be in many respects. It was extraordinarily interesting, full of military personnel from all over the empire, a lot of South Africans there. And free French there, and New Zealanders, Australians, Indians, a whole lot, all great melting pot of people. And of course it was, there was no blackout or anything, it was quite a normal city in many ways. It was an extraordinary situation, really. So we had a lot of fun ashore, we enjoyed ourselves, and then off we went, did a convoy, and back we came, and back to the flesh pots. So life was very, very pleasant indeed. And then things changed, of course, when the Africa Corps broke through and advanced right towards Alexandria along the coast, and ended up at Alamein when we finally stabilized the front there.
This is the summer of 1942, I think.
This is July 1942. Yes, the result from the naval point of view was that it was decided to evacuate Alexandria and go to Port Said, so everything pulled out, and that we all went to Port Said, which is further east, of course. And there were quite a few, I think, casualties there. I seem to remember I think it was a submarine depot ship was torpedoed on the way, and there were a lot of casualties, I think. Anyway, we ended up in Port Said, and a short time later, I can't remember whether I actually volunteered or whether I was just in fact detailed, but anyway, I found myself told to report ashore to the RN officer ashore, and I found that I was going to be part of a crew to take over an ancient merchant ship, which was lying in Port Said, crewed at the moment by Greeks. In fact, it was under the Greek flag. It was called the Georgius G, and it had been prepared as a block ship to block the canal. In fact, all the bulkheads had been cut through. There were holes through all the bulkheads, and lots of concrete had been put on board. So, it was all set to be used to block the canal if it ever came to that. Anyway, the idea was that we'd take over this ship, take it round to Alexandria, back to Alexandria, and it would then be used to try and block Mersema True, which was a port behind, further west from Alamein, it was the nearest to the German front line, which they were using as a supply port. So we had the excitement of all repairing on board this ship and taking it over from the Greeks, who had to land their cow and hens and various domestic animals they had on board. And we had to sail under the red ensign, which meant we had to sort of dress in old clothes and everything to disguise our identity as naval personnel, which Jolly Jack thoroughly enjoyed, of course. There were two engineer officers. I was the senior one, there was a warrant engineer, and there were about three or four deck officers who were all fairly ancient RNVR officers or RNR officers. And there were about 30 ratings, I suppose, on manning the ship. Anyway, we sailed extremely slowly to Alexandria. We had a Hunt-class destroyer escorting us, and we were going so slowly that this destroyer eventually took station on us by circling around us. It couldn't actually proceed as slowly as we were, so it just described circles all the way around us. And we had a very ancient, of course, triple expansion steam engines, which we were not particularly used to being turbine engineers, of course, in the Royal Navy. Anyway, we finally got this thing into Alexandria, and of course we were sailing in as a merchant ship, and we had the Egyptian port authorities came on board and were very curious about the ship and what it was doing, why it had come into Alexandria. Anyway, we managed to fool them, I suppose, and we stayed there for a number of days, actually. And I, of course, was delighted to be back in Alexandria. I never shown see my girlfriend. But it was quite an interesting period because we raided all the Greek stores and everything and lived like kings. And we spent every night listening to these amazing old gentlemen, these RN officers, who were quite old. They must have been around well over 60. And two of them had been around the Horn in Sail, so they had extraordinary stories to tell us and regale us with every night. Anyway, that all finished because they decided it was absolutely hopeless to use this ship. The operation would have required sailing up a swept channel about 10 miles straight into Mers Matru under heavy fire. And when we got there, the idea was to rig nets over the side and we scrambled down and get into MTBs and get to be evacuated, which was, I think, a fairly pious hope. But fortunately, it was cancelled. The next thing we found ourselves going down to the other end of the Suez Canal to a port, I've forgotten the name, Port Sudan, is it? I think the other end of the canal. And this time we boarded an almost new diesel merchant ship called the Cape Hawk that was bringing tanks and other supplies up to Alexandria, or Port Said rather. And we couldn't tell these people why on earth we were on board. Of course, they wonder what the hell the Navy is suddenly arriving on board this merchant ship. Anyway, the idea was for us to get experience in operating the ship, which we did, and we came through the canal back into Port Said, and then we started unloading the ship. She'd unloaded all her tanks and things at the other end of the canal. She was empty virtually of cargo. We took her out to Port Said, and of course the merchant service people wondered what on earth we were doing taking the ship up. And finally, when we unloaded all the stores and spares and things from the ship, the penny dropped. And I remember the chief engineer who stood by the ship and built it. And he said to me, I know what you're going to do. You said you're going to use it as a block ship, aren't you? And tears came in his eyes. And I said, well, yes, I suppose confidence, I have to admit, is what's going to happen to it. And he said, by God, he said, I wish I was coming with you. Anyway, we steamed her around, or at least we motored her around, because she was a diesel ship, down to Alexandria, went through all the oil business again, sat in Alexandria for several days, and then they cancelled that operation. So that was the end of that.
What was this second ship called?
Called the Cape Hawk. Yes, she was quite a modern diesel merchant ship.
How do you spell Hawk?
H-A-W-K-E. And the next thing was that a signal came, at least a message came, that they wanted, there was a further operation, and they wanted volunteers from this crew of this ship. And they must all be young and unmarried. So that was that. Anyway, we finally were whittled down to a party of three officers, and two deck officers and myself, engineer officer, and about 13 ratings.